Welcome to Creating Wealth with Jason Hartman. During this program, Jason is going to tell you some really exciting things that you probably haven't thought of before, and a new slant on investing. Fresh new approaches to America's best investment that will enable you to create more wealth and happiness than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine, self-made multimillionaire who not only talks the talk, but walks the walk. He's been a successful investor for 20 years and currently owns properties in 11 states and 17 cities. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to financial freedom. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is episode number 180, and this is your host, Jason Hartman. Thanks so much for joining me today. As you know, every 10th show, we talk about a non-financial topic. We don't really talk about business. We don't really talk about real estate investing and that kind of financial stuff. We talk about you. We talk about us. We talk about how we can be more effective as humans. And when we're more effective, it always relates back to the financial aspects in our life as well, because those are so important when we have financial success. We can do a lot more. We can actualize a lot more of our potential. And it's just a good thing for us and for the world at large. So today we have a special guest. We have David Wilcock. He is a professional lecturer, filmmaker, and researcher on ancient civilizations and the science of consciousness. This will be a pretty interesting show. We haven't really done anything quite this metaphysical, or if you will, new agey. But again, I think it's important to unite the left and the right brain and to be cognizant and aware of all that's out there and all that the world has to offer in terms of education and effectiveness. I hope you enjoyed the last few shows. Number 179, we talked about property management and Google Analytics. Number 178, we talked about self-storage investing. By the way, if any of you are interested in investing in mobile home parks and self-storage facilities, talk to our investment counselors, but really call me and talk to me about if you're interested in investing in this little group that we're kind of getting together. We really need about $100,000 minimum contribution there. But as I mentioned, we are making offers almost every day on properties in different parts of the country, and we have some real good opportunities. By the way, we have a website that we've set up for this, and it's not really completely ready, so I'm not going to announce it yet formally. We've been preparing it. We've been putting properties and opportunities in the world of self-storage, mobile home parks, and actually, we looked at a car wash that looks like a pretty interesting deal, and that's not a car wash where you're operating a business. It's a coin-operated car wash. So anything, again, that generates easy passive income and makes a lot of sense, that's what we're into here at the Creating Wealth Show. And so we'll announce that site soon, and you can go look at the opportunities there yourself. And then on number 177, we talked about Denver as an investment market. We talked about Dallas and income properties there, and we talked about podcasting. If you'd like to start your own podcasting show, remember we have a coaching program where we help you develop your own personal media empire, as I call it, the PME, personal media empire. So if you're interested in that, give us a call, go to the website jasonhartman.com and talk to us about that, and we will be glad to help you along your way in creating success there. Want to mention a couple things, though, before we go to the interview with David Wilcock, and one of them is that we've got, of course, our Masters Weekend, our event that we only do twice a year. That's the Masters Weekend, a gathering of experts, and this one is going to be better than ever. It seems like every time we learn from the last one and we tweak a few things and we make it better than ever. And we also get access to better and better speakers every time, it seems like. And this one will be no exception. We decided this time to have longer segments for speakers because some of them were so in-depth, and we don't want to have the situation where our attendees are rushing to gather around the speaker because they got so much great content. But every time you get great content, you have more questions. And so we're going to give the speakers longer segments at this next Masters Weekend, and that is October 16th and 17th. I'm pretty sure this is not 100% yet. I will tell you when it is, but I'm pretty sure we're going to do something we've never done before for this Masters Weekend, and that is we are going to do the Creating Wealth Boot Camp the day before. So that will be Friday, potentially. Again, not totally confirmed yet, but I think we're going to do it. I'm pretty sure. We're going to do the Creating Wealth Boot Camp the Friday before And then on Saturday and Sunday, we will have our Masters Weekend, a gathering of experts. We originally intended people to attend the Creating Wealth Bootcamp as a prerequisite to Masters Weekend. And I find myself every time we do a Masters Weekend, and I think this will be, I don't know, the seventh one or something like that. But every time I do it, we have a bunch of people who've never attended the Creating Wealth Bootcamp at the Masters Weekend. And we really want you to have that foundational knowledge of the Creating Wealth in Today's Economy Bootcamp prior to the Masters Weekend. Pretty sure we're going to do that. Stay tuned for more info. But if you're traveling from out of town and you want us to do it that way, please let us know. We're 80% sure we're going to do it the Friday before. But if you want to push us over the edge and make sure it happens, especially if you're traveling from out of town, let us know. Go to jasonhartman.com, fill out any of the web forms. They all have comments sections, but the contact us would do just fine and say, hey, I want to come to Masters Weekend. I want Creating Wealth the Friday before, and I'm from out of town, so I'm traveling in just for this. So that would really help convince us. Also, there is a price increase on August 15th. I hope you're listening to the show before then, but we do have a couple more incremental price increases. So take advantage of those early bird rates, and also take advantage of our free Masters Weekend preview call. We're going to do a conference call for that. It's September 23rd, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. You're welcome to join us for that. We'll have a couple of the speakers on that call, I'm sure, and we'll all be talking about it. And you'll get a good preview. You'll learn some stuff, and it's totally free. It's kind of a preview call. And you can register for that. You do need to register at jasonhartman.com. The number of callers is somewhat limited for that because of the hosting service we use to host the conference call. So do register early so you make sure you can get in for that. And also, I want you to join our text club. Be sure to do that. It's very simple. Text my name, the word Jason, to 411-247, 411-247. So just text my name from your cell phone, and also text your first name and your email address. Put spaces in between those. So again, you're going to text to 411-247, and you'll text Jason, space, your first name, space, your email address, and we'll enter you in the text club. We have some great prizes, some great freebies that only text club members get. So be sure to join our text club. And one last thing before we go to the interview with David Wilcock. Get yourself a subscription. Do yourself a big favor. Get yourself a subscription to my newsletter, The Financial Freedom Report. We've been running this newsletter for a little over a year now, and if I don't say so myself, although we've had subscribers say so, that it's an excellent, excellent newsletter. And for $197 a year, you get the audio. We have that professionally narrated, so we read you the newsletter, our professional voiceover people. And you also get the copy, the print copy, the PDF copy, via digital download with the audio every issue, and that is usually about 20 pages long as the PDF copy. It's full color. It's beautiful. There are a lot of great charts and graphs, and there's about 16 to 20 articles in each newsletter. We also do some analysis of some investments and so forth, and there's just a couple things you get. The Financial Freedom Report has got to be one of them, so take advantage of that. It's really fantastic, and let's go to the interview with David Wilcock. We're going to talk about dreams. We're going to talk about consciousness. And again, we've never done a sort of new agey metaphysical topic like this before on the Creating Wealth show, but I think you'll like it. It's something a little different. And every 10th show, that's what we do, something a little different. So here we go. We'll be right back with his interview in less than 60 seconds.
Now's your opportunity to get the Financial Freedom Report. The Financial Freedom Report provides financial self-defense in uncertain times, and it's your source for innovative, forward-thinking investment property strategies and advice. Get your newsletter subscription today. You get a digital download and even more. The price, only $197. Go to jasonhartman.com to get yours today.
My pleasure to welcome David Wilcox to the show. He has some interesting things to say about an evolution of consciousness, which we are going through or about to go through here on Earth, and also about 2012. You might find his views very interesting and contrary to many of the other prognosticators out there. It's good to have him on the show. David, welcome.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's a real pleasure.
My pleasure, too. Tell us a little bit about your work, if you would.
I started to have dreams about UFOs as early as age 2. And would wake up feeling as if I had lost something and would be in tears. It all seemed to build up to when I was age 5, having an out-of-body experience where I experienced sense of floating over my own body in bed and saw myself breathing and apparently still alive in bed, but yet here I am up there. And I'm thinking, how could I be in two places at once? I went down the hallway, feet first, floating right below the ceiling, and then down the stairwell. And at this point, I started to think I might have been dying, and I got scared and went back into my body. So after that, I started to think there was a link between the dreams that I had been having, which had had a lot of UFO content, including speaking to people on the UFOs, and this out-of-body that I had, that maybe if I hadn't gotten scared in the out-of-body, I would have actually met these people, whoever they were, in person. So for 2 years, I labored in vain to try to get another chance to have an out-of-body experience. It never happened. I finally, in futility, asked my mother, what is going on? What can I do to have another one of these happen? And unlike some mothers who would have been terrified that their son was either demon-possessed or was dying or whatever, she actually led me down into the basement and showed me books on ESP and hypnosis, and I began reading them. And within a reasonably short window of time, I was able to start having really profound psychic results, which it only intensified what I already was able to do, because I could read people's minds very easily. It just was a talent that for me wasn't anything unusual or special. So then we have to fast forward a long, long way into, I was in high school, and that's when I finally was able to have lucid experience again. Now, if somebody hasn't actually practiced the disciplines and tried this themselves, it's really hard to describe what it's like to be in a world where you have complete control over your universe by thought alone, meaning you can levitate, you can literally melt through a wall, melt through a window, you can easily fly, you can easily levitate enormous objects, and you can even completely change the environment around you just by thinking yourself into a different place. For a long time, I was taught by these books that it was strictly an environment that was created within my own thoughts. But as the years went by, I discovered that there were, in fact, other people that were co-creating these realities with me. I had some interesting confrontations with beings when I was in these lucid dreams or out-of-body states, and they would criticize me for thinking that everybody was my own mind and that there wasn't any greater reality to it. So this actually did finally lend itself to a dream practice where, beginning in September 1992, I started to write my dreams down every single morning. I've continued to do that for the preceding 17 years. I document them. I follow the guidance that they offer as much as possible, which requires understanding the language of symbolism, which is how dreams are conveyed. They don't come right out and tell you a message. It preserves your free will in the process. And if you want to do lucid dreams, you have to be able to remember what your dreams say anyway. The key in that one is that once you wake up from a dream, you remember the dream, but then you think of yourself noticing the things that are out of place or anomalous, and then recognizing in the dream, in your imagination at first, that you are dreaming. And if you do this exercise, and then as you fall back asleep, you keep repeating the phrase to yourself, next time I'm dreaming, I want to remember to recognize that I'm dreaming. Then what will happen if you practice this every morning for a while is that sooner or later you're going to find yourself in a dream, and you're going to see something weird that doesn't belong, and you're going to say, oh my God, this is a dream, this isn't real, and you can seize control of the dream. You can actually practice testing your reality throughout the day where you look around you and try to spot things that are out of place to see if, in fact, you're dreaming. And if you start that mechanism going in your head, testing out your reality regularly, that's the same kind of muscle that you can condition so that you'll have lucid dreams much more easily. The reason why I bring all this up is that it does seem that to varying degrees, this whole question of 2012 and the shift that we're going through has as its ultimate reward the actual fulfillment of a lucid dreaming type of state for everyone on Earth at the same time. That, in fact, what we now can only access in a dream state becomes something that we physically experience. And I'm working on a book right now, which we were talking about before we started recording, called 2012 Enigma, Blueprints for a Golden Age. Because I think there's a very widespread misunderstanding about 2012 and what it really entails. Now, many people have dreams that are of epic apocalyptic disasters, and they then infer that those dreams are saying that the world is actually going to have this happen. There are also a variety of prophecies out there that have been written based on dreams and visions of this nature. Now, it's a very important point to remember that when you're in a dream, there is something going on called psychocartography, which means that the entire cartography, the entire landscape of what you're in the dream, is actually a projection of your psyche, hence psychocartography. Now, in the most simple terms I can explain to you, that means that whatever you see in the dream is a three-dimensional symbolic representation of your psyche. And this means all the different aspects of who you are, the various personality quirks that you have, the pains in your past, the potentials that you have, many of which you may not be using. In fact, based on what most people's potential is, the amount that they ever access in their regular life for most people is probably 5 to 10%. And I'm not talking about the dormant brain idea. I'm talking about just the actual genius that we all innately possess. Most of us have a very small amount of that actually active. And so in the dream state, it's very, very important to remember that if you have some kind of epic disaster in the world, what that's actually saying is that there is something that has happened to you or is going to happen to you soon that will, in fact, upset the apple cart throughout your entire psychological structure. So, given examples of that kind of phenomenon would be a major economic event in your life. Jason, you were just telling me that you're moving and you were expressing the kind of stress that you're going through in the process of moving. That's another example.
Moving is exciting, but it's stressful when you're going through it.
So I wouldn't be surprised if in the last couple of weeks you might have had some dreams where some really crazy stuff was happening on an epic scale.
I haven't, but would you consider yourself a dream interpretation person?
Absolutely. After 17 years, you got to learn the language, you know? One of the most important functions that dreams have for us is to essentially project our internal psychological struggles that are happening in the subconscious sense. So you're a high achiever just like me. And one of the ways that people are able to stay high achievers is that when you satisfy a particular goal, you've already moved on to the next thing or maybe five other next things before that one ever is satisfied. So as a result, when you satisfy one particular goal, there may not necessarily be a complete sense of fulfillment or satisfaction because now the struggle is on to something else. And that's how we end up cranking out all the output that we do. One of the most unfortunate things that we have to deal with, and I say unfortunate from the perspective of the egoic mind, not necessarily from the perspective of the higher mind, is that we get exactly what we invite. And it sounds like a typical metaphysical cliche like The Secret, but people don't understand the extent to which this is true. If you have an intrinsic lack of love for yourself, which in this case I'm not saying that you do, but I'm speaking now for the everyman listening in the audience. There's an intrinsic lack of love for yourself present in your psychological structure. Ironically, the universe is not going to send you people who love you and shower you with all these wonderful blessings. You're going to attract someone into your life who also doesn't love you.
Because that's what you're setting up. You're expecting that, right?
Right. And so the trick is that these people will come into your life and they will upset the apple cart and torment you to varying degrees until you have that psychological breakthrough that says, I really don't need this person in my life. And by ending toxic relationships as gallantly as possible, you end up moving through psychological walls in yourself where you can then learn to accept yourself more. So when it comes to something like this, I also talk about the fool's equation, as I call it, which is, if I get X, then I will be happy. So I think we all, to some degree, may be laboring under the fool's equation. We are taught to have a goal-oriented systemic thinking. And what the guidance has said that I've been in contact with through dreams and various other means is that the real way to fulfill the goals that you have is to reverse the fool's equation. If I am happy, then I will get X, Y, or Z. So instead of setting up your whole life so that you say, well, I'm not happy now, but once this thing happens, once I get through this stressful thing, once I get past this deadline, once I move into my new house, then I'll be happy.
Right. It's like Dennis Waitley's wonderful old poem entitled Someday I'll. That's
exactly right.
I apostrophe LL, but the metaphor of an island, right?
Right. So you're right on track, because once you can fully step into the power of the now, as Eckhart Tolle would say, then you're going to have the ability to pursue these goals without being emotionally dramatic about it. And if you have an emotional drama that says, well, once I get this, then I'll be happy, the universe says, oh, you're not happy, so I will make sure that you continue not to be happy.
Yeah, that's a bad deal.
Well, this actual psychological talk that we're doing right now in terms of what I would call personality integration and ageless wisdom is really what we have to go through on the deepest level to embrace the event horizon of 2012. That's why my next video that's going to be free is called 2012 Event Horizon. I have one out now called 2012 Enigma you can just watch those on YouTube or link to them from my website. This one is still in the hopper, and people have been saying, when is it coming out? We're getting close. It's like 3 hours long, and I'm trying to figure a way to get it down to like 2.25.
Which is hard to do
like
negative
editing. Like, yeah,
really exactly.
Hard.
I know. But David, I got to ask you a question, because what's interesting about your perspective that is somewhat different from sort of the, and I'm doing the quote unquote here, new age perspective, is that most of that genre would say, I, meaning me or you or anybody listening, I create it all. Everything is, I am the source. Everything comes from my own thoughts, and I attract experiences, positive and negative, into my life because of my thoughts. At some level, conscious or unconscious, everything is sort of created by me. But what you say, I mean, you'd agree that that's sort of the...
I call that metaphysical narcissism, but yeah.
Right, yeah. I love that. So you think that the New Age movement is generically somewhat narcissistic, metaphysically narcissistic. That's really good. But what you seem to be saying is it's not just about us creating our own thoughts. As a man thinketh, we become what we think about, the secret, all of that type of stuff. It's really about us, but also this sort of whole earthly consciousness.
Well, let's even expand the aperture way past the earth, because the bottom line is the creator, as an intelligent universe with all these multiple dimensions and literally everything that's matter, everything that's energy, everything that's biology has an intrinsic consciousness to it. That consciousness isn't sitting up there as some sort of finished product that's waiting for us all to catch up or to rejoin whatever we lost, that we're the fallen and we just have to get back to the perfection we already had. The universe itself is actually in a state of becoming. And so we are actually co-creating with the universal mind. And that universal mind bifurcates into all sorts of different limbs on a very intense cosmic tree. So you not only have the blueprints of oneness and universal consciousness that the creator would have, which is the entire manifest universe, you also have the personality of our galaxy, which even on the most superficial level has this career agenda for us of these 22 basic experiences, or what are called archetypes, that we all have to go through in the process of evolving our personality. Then the sun has its own intrinsic curriculum for us. The solar system pushes us energetically in various ways, which we would call astrology, and that also affects financial markets in very clever ways that Russian scientist Tijevsky covered with sunspot activity, many other things. And once you're here on Earth, you also are grappling with the fact that your mind is non-local. In other words, the biological mind that's created by your neurons in your brains and throughout, and when I say brains, I mean we actually do have neurological tissue in the heart. If you cut off certain parts of the heart and hand it to a brain surgeon, he's going to say it's brain tissue. So there's a brain in the heart. There's brains in actually each of the chakras, according to Casey readings. Those only constitute what allows the body to function on the involuntary level and the things that are like instinctive, like if you get burned and then you have a nervous system reaction to the shock. Most of the stuff that you do that involves intellect, like processing my speech and making it understandable to you, that's actually happening in an energetic level, which is non-local. So, for example, Cambridge psychiatrist Dr. John Lorber studied people that suffered in the 60s and 70s before they came up with a way to solve the problem, a condition called hydroencephaly, where the fluid inside the brain would actually swell up and ultimately dissolve the brain down to this layer that's no thicker than a slice of bologna on the inside of your skull. And yet these people, although approximately 80% of them would be severely disabled, if not die from it, approximately 15 to 20% would actually be remarkably normal in terms of their ability to think and function. And there's really no skeptical explanation that can explain this, short of the idea that we have to accept the scientific weight, which is very compelling, and this is one of the main things I go into in my book, that our thoughts do not occur in the body. They occur in an energy body, which is coupled with the physical body. Now, here's the thing that's really amazing. If we were to be on a major television show and we show a hidden figure puzzle, the solution to it, to a whole bunch of people, let's say 5-10 million people see the solution to this puzzle, then what happens is if we go to some place like Borneo where they don't have any TV and they wouldn't have seen this broadcast, and then we test the average villager on the ability to see the zebra inside the birch trees, let's say, if it's a hidden figure puzzle like that, then before we've done the television broadcast, they may take 25 seconds to see it. But then after we do the broadcast, they may only take 7 seconds. And that's statistically consistent. So what I'm saying is that on an intrinsic level, the thoughts that we create actually extend into a sort of universal data bank. And everyone else, especially on Earth, but it also goes throughout the universe, throughout the galaxy, throughout the solar system, what you think of as your conscious mind is way more complicated and way more influenced by things around you than you may realize. And so one of the most unfortunate consequences of this is that if you happen to be living next door to somebody who's undergoing profound psychological distress, that thought will actually come into your own field to some degree, and it can affect you to the point where you start to feel depressed and weary. Now, our conscious mind has a biasing mechanism that prevents us from going crazy and schizophrenic. What we do is we interpret the thoughts that we have as if they have personal causes. So we say, oh, well, the reason why I'm depressed is because of this person or that person or because I haven't finished this thing that I want to do or whatever. And if you want to become more psychic, it's really important to start asking the question, is this mine or someone else's? And ultimately, it's a frequency game, and the key is to keep the positive attitude because that will actually out-resonate whatever lower thought forms are in the environment around us. And what's so interesting is that on a worldwide level, when enough people focus on that positive vibration, if you want to call it that, it actually affects everyone's mind. And this was most conclusively demonstrated by transcendental meditation, when they had these major meditation gatherings of 7,000 people getting together under one roof, and those 7,000 people meditating for 1 week actually caused profound reductions in the level of fatalities, the level of war, the level of terrorist activity, all across the board throughout the world. In fact, there was a 72% reduction in terrorism. And we could finance, for less than the cost of one B-2 bomber a year, a rotating group of 7,000 people to be doing this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the real key, again, is that if you have that positive attitude within yourself, then you're no longer going to be permeated by these thought forms that could be from your neighbor or could be from people that are suffering around the world. And the best way you can help the world, actually, is on a non-local level. That's why you go back to St. Francis of Assisi, who was essentially an ascended master. He said, a single moment of pure consciousness is worth more to the world than an entire lifetime of good works. So if you are able to actually tap into that source consciousness, as some would call it, and to allow your conscious mind to become the universal mind, to be filled with that presence, you'll notice it's very joyful, you'll notice it's uplifting, you feel kind of high, you feel giddy, and you also feel this deep cosmic flowing current that is the universal heartbeat. The more that you can stay in that state, you'll start to reinterpret things so that when somebody says something hurtful to you, you don't immediately go into a reaction where you want to be angry and yell at them. You basically can see that they're confused. They don't realize that they're part of this one infinite being, that everything is perfect the way it is, and they're choosing to believe in an illusion. They're choosing to believe in scarcity. They're choosing to believe in lack, that there's a lack of love, that there's a lack of money, that there's a lack of youthfulness, there's a lack of health, whatever their particular hang-up is. And that, in turn, makes them have an emotional reaction. That emotional reaction has a resonance, it has a frequency, and if you stay in the positive vibration, it out-resonates that. So basically, the 2012 thing is that enough of us reach this level of understanding and can hold that state of mind consistently enough that there is some sort of harmonic effect where everyone on Earth, to some degree, is now able to exist in a much more positive framework. And when that happens, and a lot of the negativity goes away, it's as if there's a psychic clamp that's been held on us all that's released. And apparently, when this clamp is released, we will have much, much more access to paranormal ability like telekinesis, levitation, instant healing, even potentially warping through space and time. So I do actually see that if people are worried about the New World Order, the Illuminati, they're worried about Earth changes, we actually know that the conditions of the Earth can be substantially improved by that positive focus, enough people doing that. We know that the more that we stay in this positive focus, the more that all the pockets of negativity in the world will quite naturally be crumbled. So, you know, whether you like Obama or not, the fact is that this president is decidedly different than the one we had before. He's much less willing to rattle the saber. He actually went to Egypt and gave an address to the Muslim world that was very complimentary rather than condescending. And that kind of an effect that he created by that and the way that that shifted the minds and hearts of the Muslim world has a huge energetic resonating effect. And whether Obama can pull this off or not, it's not really central, because this will happen regardless of who's in power, regardless of the things that are on the outside. When you see the financial system crumbling last year, and we may be headed into another period like that this year pretty soon, which will be temporary, it's the cleansing of the old stuff. So the dreams have been telling me that we're heading into a nasty little period here coming up where there's going to be some temporary pain, sort of what they call a biting through. But then on the other side of this, you're going to see a really, really substantial shift for the positive in the world. Specifically, we're looking at the breakdown of what I would call the New World Order Bush faction.
We'll be back in just a minute.
Here's your chance to catch up on all of those Creating Wealth shows that you've missed. There's a 3-book set with shows 1 through 60, all digital download. You save $94 by buying this 3-book set. Go ahead and get these advanced strategies for wealth creation. For more details, go to jasonhartman.com.
Before we get into all this, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
I want to just ask you a couple questions about some things you've talked about already, if I may. So just please hold that thought, because it's fascinating.
Yeah, sure.
First of all, on the subject of the non-local brain, and more on the subject of the universal mind, I guess you might call it that. You may have a slightly different name for it, but I think you get the idea.
Yeah, semantics aren't really that key.
I have long thought that the physical brain in one's head is not just a processor, but it's a generator. And what I mean by that is that if you look at Krillian photography, if you look at various measurement tools, you can see that there is energy going on outside the skull that actually changes based on thoughts.
Absolutely.
There is an electromagnetic energy. It's an electrochemical reaction, and any electrical part of that causes things to happen outside of the electrical instrument, light bulbs, anything.
Absolutely.
So does that sort of go, because I thought that for a long time, and then I came across Carl Priebram many years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I was just fascinated with his work. Now, he's a Stanford neurosurgeon, I guess, and he sort of coined the holographic brain term, or holographic mind, and then there's another book I read on that. I can't remember the author's name offhand. But is that what you're talking about? Are you saying the holographic mind when you talk about the non-local brain, or is there more to it than that?
No, that's absolutely correct. The only slight variance that I would add to your analysis here is that we're not fundamentally dealing with an electromagnetic phenomenon. There is another energy that the Russians call torsion fields, and I've now decided to call the source field because it's simpler and it actually is more inclusive as a term. So the source field is really the underlying energy which actually manifests as the flow of gravity, if you can believe that. The Earth is being created by an energy that flows into it, and we get caught in that energy like mosquitoes in a screen window that's blowing into the Earth, and that's what's actually holding us down on the Earth. Gravity is not sucking us down, but rather it's the energy that comes into the Earth that's pushing us down onto the Earth. So that source field, the Russians actually did a lot of research on this. There's a guy named Terletzky who actually showed that gravitation is paired with another phenomenon called spin, which is usually only seen in the quantum level. It has to do with the spin of the electron around the nucleus and so forth. Now, that's called a torsion field. Torsion means spin. So most physicists, in fact, all physicists who are into the quantum world, acknowledge what they call static torsion fields, meaning spin within an atom. But what we're now dealing with is dynamic torsion fields, meaning spin fields that are paired with gravity that are outside the atom, that actually move through space, waves of gravity, waves of spin. Now, these waves, again, are the intrinsic building block of physical matter, and they are the intrinsic building block of consciousness. The two are fundamentally one and the same, just in different phases, is really the only delineation there. So this source field actually is where thoughts are processed in the brain. And we have, for example, the work of Dr. Cleve Baxter, who took people's cells out of their mouth while they were still alive and put them in a lab, wired them up so that you can measure the electrical activity of those living cells from your mouth. And this was a NASA astronaut who I met in Zurich, Switzerland. His name is Dr. Brian O'Leary, and I asked him about this experiment. He gave his cells in the lab to Baxter, and then he drove to the airport, which was a 300-mile drive, and he synchronized watches with Baxter, and every time that he had a wrong turn or got angry, or somebody cut him off on the highway, or anything happened that caused him to have an emotional upset, He wrote down what time it happened. And sure enough, in the lab, his living cells, some 300 miles away, reacted precisely at the same instant that he had an upset every single time.
That is unbelievable. I mean, that is just totally amazing that that happens. It's incredible. It really is incredible.
It's one of just an incredible variety of data points that say the same thing. And this is why I'm doing this film Convergence with the guy that wrote the movie Contact. His name is Jim Hart. He's worked with Spielberg, Francis Ford Coppola. I was very delighted around this time last year when he suddenly showed up and said he wanted to work on this film with me. What we're doing is we're taking all these ideas and putting them into a big-budget Hollywood film context where you have characters and a fictional storyline that drives this stuff forward. Because, look, we need to see on a worldwide level that when we feel fear and shock, it's like you could basically liken it to the DNA molecule as a crystal. And we know from the work of Dr. Glenn Ryan that there's a biophysical effect on DNA when we feel fear. It actually crimps up. Now, crystals, if you ever have like a lighter, a cigarette lighter that doesn't use a flint but uses a crystal, you push down on the button, you hear that clicking noise, and then a little spark jumps out. Well, that's called a piezoelectric effect. And what that means is that when you compress a crystal lattice structure, it shoots out energy, and that's what you get your little blue spark from. So a crystal is automatically going to do that, and it will do that every time. It's not like it's going to run out of juice. Every time you push that lighter button down, the crystal is going to give off another big electrical blast. So on some level, your DNA is actually doing the same thing. It gets compressed by fear. This is what Dr. Glenn Ryan proved on a microbiological level, that your fear actually causes DNA to contract. He actually was able to prove this under the microscope by having people feel anger and fear while they were holding tissue from a placenta. The people who felt anger, they actually had a measurable effect on the structure of the DNA in those cells. So when the DNA gets compressed, it shoots out this energy. That's the energy that actually was reflected in the cells 300 miles away in Dr. Baxter's lab. That's the energy that negatively oriented beings actually use as sort of like a food supply. This is where you get into black magic and voodoo. That kind of stuff is true, but it only works, again, if you have a susceptibility to it by not having the shielding of the positive attitude and the positive vibration. So what we're dealing with is, again, the world in general will come to a much higher level of coherence when we turn within, deal with our spiritual stuff, learn not to take things personally, learn to be more loving, learn to be more present in the now, and awaken that consciousness within us so that we actually reinterpret the experiences we're happening. We don't see ourselves as a victim. We don't see ourselves as jealous or angry or fearful or sad. We take each of these emotions that pull us out of that perfection of the moment, and we're able to allow that negativity to fall away. That's really what this is about.
All right, so another question for you. Why is it whenever I study or hear all of this good stuff that I just find so fascinating and I love your work, why is it that when I hear this, it's always skewed from the positive side? In other words, you gave the Obama example. So he goes to Egypt and the people that don't like Obama would say he's pandering, he's not tough, he's acquiescing, he's appeasing. Then they bring up the example of, boy, aren't we glad that some of the Europeans didn't appease Hitler, right? That sounds logical to me. I would agree with that statement in the Hitler example. Why is it that all of this has to be on a positive vein? I've heard programs where people talk about psychic attacks, and they talk about how they're negative. And so you gave the example of black magic and things like this. Does it work on the negative side? And I don't know if working is a good thing, but I'm just wondering why it has to be loving and positive and don't feel fear. And because some might say that had Obama gone to Egypt like George Bush and been a cowboy and like, hey, you better not mess with us, the other side might have been fearful and said, hey, we better not mess with them. Or no.
Well, that argument is certainly one that was given out by the people that disliked the maneuver that he made to work towards world peace. But on an intrinsic level, we're going to need to deal with the fact very soon that we're all citizens of the earth rather than citizens of America or citizens of Christianity. And most Muslims are actually very moderate. Now, it is true that you have certain countries where there is a fundamentalist regime and it's much more hardline. There's countries in the Arab world where you really wouldn't want to go if you're not already part of that system. But then there's places that are a lot more liberal by comparison.
And doesn't have to be Muslim. You just gave the example of Egypt.
Right.
So that's, I'm just using your example. Could be anything.
I think that really the deepest metaphysical realization that any one person can have is that there's only one of us here. The universe itself is one mind, it's one consciousness, one identity. And I can't necessarily prove to you that that's true beyond a certain point. I do have a lot of really cool science I could throw at you that suggests that that's true, but you can't really ultimately prove that that's true, except in your own direct experience of the beingness in the now. And once you have done enough meditative practice or you've actually had one of these sort of threshold experiences, as I call it, there's no doubt when you're in that moment that you're in this universal mind. It becomes very clear. And then people who haven't had it can easily ridicule Zen Buddhists and Tibetans and various sages and ascended beings who have actually experienced this consciousness for themselves. But it doesn't really change the fact that if you go seeking, you can find it for yourself. In order to get there, you have to drop a lot of cynicism that frames you as essentially separate from the universe. Now, that's what I was given in a very important meditative practice over a long period of time. The core of all suffering, the core of why we feel like we're in fear and why we would need to intimidate other people and why we would need to defend ourselves against an attack, all of those emotions come from the feeling that we've been abandoned by whatever we consider God to be, that we're alone here in the jungle. Bad things happen to good people. Sometimes you're just going to walk down the street and you're going to get shot and you're dead and that's the end of it. And if you only identify with the body and you don't see that you have an identity separate from the body, like I did when I was 5 and I had this out-of-body experience and I'm saying, okay, there's my body down there and here I am up here. If the body consciousness is all you have, then yes, the body is very much attached to itself, to its own survival, as well it should be, that's its job. But that's what we call the egoic mind. The ego is the mind that is seeking the comfort of the body, the stability of the body, the security of the body. It wants the body to look young and beautiful. It wants the body healthy. It wants the body to have money and good food and good drink and good song and all these things that we really take very seriously. Now, silence, just being there alone, without anybody talking to you, without anything playing in the background, just listening to the stillness, isn't something that most of us would like, because what the ego has to do is essentially give up, has to just let go of saying, this is what I want, and this is what I desire, and just kind of let itself slide away. And then what you'll have to happen is that you become awareness. Awareness becomes the state of mind that you're in. Now, when you say, why does everybody have to skew things towards the positive? You don't have to. You don't have to go into this state of pure awareness. There's all different levels of confusion you can have along the way, and that includes...
That's a great way to put it. There's all different... as though that's almost a benefit. There's all different levels of confusion you can have along the way. I love it. All right, go ahead.
So one of the things you can have, if you want it, is you can have a negative spiritual practice where you're essentially absorbing energy from others to sustain yourself. There was a really important study by a Russian named Berlikov, where he took fish eggs and put them near each other, and when some of the eggs were a lot closer to being fish than the other ones, the eggs that were a lot further in their development would actually weaken the other eggs, the ones that were younger. And those younger eggs would actually die or wither and have lots of weird birth defects, whereas the eggs that were stronger actually grew even faster, and the creatures that came out were even more robust than they normally would have been. What he also found was that if you have two sets of eggs where one is almost as old as the other one, then the ones that are slightly weaker will absorb energy from the ones that are stronger, and they will accelerate their growth and actually catch up with the eggs that are farther ahead. So fish understand this on an instinctive level, and that's why they lay their eggs in different places so that they don't cross-pollinate with each other. So that is sort of like a scientific validation of what you have with black magic kind of stuff. And that includes the fact that the world leaders will deliberately create wars so that the deaths of the people in the wars are creating this energetic release that they can then absorb. And there is an actual spiritual process they're using where that absorbed energy is then translated into economic and worldly power. But again, that's kind of like the epitome of the dark side.
Yeah, and it is. That's really
ugly.
The problem
with the dark side is that that's not who you really are.
Right.
You know, these guys that are Luciferian, they believe that Lucifer is the great maker of the universe, and that basically the great maker set up the game and then said, okay, I'm out of here. You guys are on your own now. And then they believe that in order to become enlightened, you have to become a god where none existed. So that essentially is, although they would probably take great umbrage with me telling them this, that is essentially the enshrinement of the ego. You're basically saying, well, this universe is just a big load of crap, and it's just got some laws that are in work, but there's nobody there that really gives a damn. So I realize that I'm God, and I'm just going to take that seriously, and now I'll just find the other people who have also realized that, and they have a hierarchy and a pecking order, and I'm going to fight to see how high I can get in that pecking order myself.
Another side of cosmic narcissism, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that all of us are being forced to deal with. I don't think anybody on the planet has been kept apart from this drama of the so-called Illuminati or the negative elite or New World Order, whatever you want to call it. Something that's on everybody's mind. We all know that it's going on. The people who don't want to see the full extent of it are usually in that place of denial because they're so terrified of the idea that it's true, that the intrinsic belief that we have in a happy ending is utterly buffaloed by the idea of these guys being out there.
Well, tell us about that. I find the whole secret society discussion very fascinating. I would say that I never really believed much in sort of conspiracy theories until a couple years ago. I started kind of paying attention, and I'm like, these things are lining up so perfectly that I'm really giving them some credence nowadays. What do you think? Are you saying they're not true or they are true? Or we're creating them either way? Okay, go ahead.
You know, they've tried to recruit me. I mean, why wouldn't they? I have a lot of publicity. I give out spiritual teaching that's not in the mainstream sense. I get into Atlantis and Egyptian mysteries and a lot of the things that they really like. But we have some very, very fundamental points of disagreement, and I am not threatened by them. If they want to kill me, I can't really stop that from happening, but it's not the end of my existence. So I don't have a problem with talking to somebody and getting into an argument over metaphysics. And I have had arguments with them, and one of the things that we argue about is whether any of these deeper spiritual disciplines really matter. Now, one of the things that I'm talking about firsthand conversation that I've had with some of these folks. One of the things they've told me firsthand is that they don't think that anybody who meditates and tries to reach that personal nirvana within is truly doing anything that's effective or that means anything. And the reason why they believe that is they say, well, look at us. We've been doing this for thousands of years. We've been running the planet, determining the course of history, creating wars, getting people to fight each other. Families send their sons to die because we decide that they're going to go die, even if the cause that they're dying for is utterly fallacious and has no bearing on the truth. We're just puppet masters playing the game. And so, yeah, part of the game is that these Zen guys are allowed to think that they've reached enlightenment. They're allowed to think that they've gotten somewhere. But they're just going to die, and that's the end of it. And they don't have any greater identity.
Let me take a brief pause. We'll be back in just a minute.
What's great about the shows you'll find on jasonhartman.com is that if you want to learn about some cool new investor software, there's a show for that. If you want to learn why Rome fell, Hitler rose, and Enron failed, there's a show for that. If you want to know about property evaluation technology on the iPhone, there's a show for that. And if you'd like to know how to make millions with mobile homes, there's even a show for that. Yep, there's a show for just about anything. Only from jasonhartman.com. Or type in Jason Hartman in the iTunes store.
It seems that these wars are really, I hate to say it, necessary to prop up the model we're in with these central banks. And
oh, absolutely.
Too many people are profiting from them. I mean, they're ridiculous. Why can't we just sort of stay out of people's business a little bit more? That's my view of it.
Well, that's exactly right. You have to understand that there are other things that we could do that would be monumentally stimulating to the so-called military-industrial complex. What ideally will happen, and I think this is going to happen sooner rather than later, is to retool the entire military-industrial complex away from fighting wars and into basically saving the planet from the ecological problems that we have. Now, some people would think that we've already crossed the line and we're past the tipping point where anything could be done to reverse the course that we're on with the environment. But a lot of the suppressed technology that these guys have been holding on to includes things that can create very high amounts of energy with no pollution, without having to burn oil or anything else. And it doesn't require solar power. It requires only that you tap into what I call the source field directly. And there's plenty of different ways to do that. It's just that it's all been hidden from us. So these negative groups do foment wars and they do foment catastrophes so that, on the one hand, they profit from it, but really, if they wanted to, they could create other systems that would be equally or more profitable. It's just that they also have this very nasty level of cynicism and complete sarcastic disregard for most people. They really think of most people as being very, very ignorant. And one of the cases in point they use for that is, hey, look, we're out there giving you the symbols that we exist right out in the open. We put the tallest building in Washington, D.C. is a frickin' Egyptian obelisk. It dwarfs everything else in Washington by a lot. It's Egyptian. Now, the dollar says, in God we trust. What's the God they're talking about if you look on the back and you see a pyramid with an eye on top? What's the God? They don't think it's the same God that you and I do. So they're out there putting out these symbols. They have Isis, the keeper of the mysteries, the sacred flame, who has these rays of light coming off the top of her head and is holding the sacred flame and holding the Book of the Mysteries, which is the Statue of Liberty. That's why it's there. That's why France built it, because France was very keen on helping America be the fulfillment of these ancient prophecies that said that they were going to have a so-called New World Order, which is why, again, you look at the symbol with a dollar where the pyramid is on the back of the dollar, and it says Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new secular order, New World Order. Now, these guys have inherited prophecies that are much older than they are, and they've misinterpreted the gist of what the prophecy says. They believe the prophecy says there's going to be this big change in the world, and they will be dominating and controlling the whole thing. They're correct about the big change happening. They are totally off base in terms of whether they will actually be running the planet afterwards. And again, I urge people to go to my website, divinecosmos.com, because we have so much more depth of content to explore these questions than I can ever go into in one radio show. And I'm more than happy to share this with you, but it's like, as you well understand, we're dealing with a very, very complex series of subjects here.
Oh, sure we are. Sure we are. We're running a little long. We should have you back on, really, and sort of take some of these topics as kind of vertical topics and go into them in more depth. But do you want to kind of maybe give a wrap-up about 2012?
Sure.
Because we didn't really get to get into that enough, I don't think.
2012 is no longer a question of, I wonder if the Mayans saw something in the future. What we're seeing is a wide array of prophecies from all the different types of indigenous shamanic tribes, Native Americans, everybody around the world who had any ability to be psychic and see the future, all spoke about a time of great tribulation. It's not just the Christian rapture prophecy. It's all over the world. Islam has it. Buddhism has it. Hinduism has it. I mean, everybody. They all talk about a time where there's great sorrow, where there's great suffering, where there's lots of upheaval and disappointment in the world, and they also basically say that it all leads up to sort of like an epic battle. In Norse mythology, it's called Ragnarok. Of course, in Christianity, it's called Armageddon. But the battle, people misinterpret. They keep thinking that it's something that hasn't happened yet. We're almost through the Battle of Armageddon now. It's basically just about over. And you're going to see some really, really substantial stuff happening this year, most likely, in which the New World Order faction, the Republican neoconservative Bush faction, is going to have an epic collapse, and you're going to see them being held accountable as international economic terrorists who have played games with the economy on the orders of trillions of dollars of fraud and have led to a very destabilized condition.
You're not much of a George Bush fan, I can tell.
Well, I'm not. I'm a fan of the human race, and if somebody is pro-life in terms of, in this case, we enjoy being alive, I'm going to go with that rather than somebody who's anti-life and thinks that culling the population via genocide and forced starvation and all these nefarious things is a good thing. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. You can go and watch a video interview of Aaron Russo where he's talking about his own friendship with Nick Rockefeller. And Rockefeller is the family that actually runs the so-called neoconservative side of things and has since the beginning of the 20th century with the oil empire they built. And they're really one of the core causes of all these problems in the world. Well, Rockefeller was telling Aaron Russo quite out in the open, you know, why do you care about these people? They don't matter to you. Just don't even think about it. And so there's this very strong disdain for life in general. And the idea that they would want to turn this into some sort of prison planet where they can control us and have martial law and get everybody to do things their way, it's ridiculous. And I coined the term fear porn because it's sufficiently outrageous of a thing to say to emphasize the fact that there's so many guys out there and girls who get addicted to reading about things that terrify them, specifically New World Order, Illuminati, martial law, death camps, swine flu vaccines that could actually have killer viruses in them. There's just an incredible glut of this stuff on the internet.
I would agree, but there's sort of a glut of everything on the internet. I mean, on the devil's advocate side of that, wouldn't you say it's good to be prepared type thing?
Oh, absolutely.
To know what's going on
by
and
no
be
means
informed?
Am I saying just sit back and do nothing. You definitely should have some stored food on hand, some stored water on hand, so that in the event that there's disruptions in your own local area, that you're going to get through it pretty smoothly without a lot of trouble. But on a deeper level, let's just look at the fact that this transformation that we're going through as a planet is obviously reaching a point where everybody is figuring this stuff out. Now that you got the internet, we have the knowledge. We're not lying there in the darkness anymore. Even you were just saying, well, a couple of years ago I didn't believe any of this stuff, but now I'm really starting to be swayed. That's happening to everybody, and that's what this is about. The only way that this kind of hijinks can go on is in the shadow. If it's not hidden anymore, then it can't work anymore. So that part of what the 2012 prophecy is about, and there's so many different ways I could talk about it, but one of the main things is we're all waking up to what really has been going on. And on a metaphysical level, the reason why these negative guys have been here causing all these troubles is because of that same attractive force I was saying before. We as a planet, in our own families, we're betraying each other, we're lying to each other, we're stealing from each other. Fathers that are beating their children and then acting, well, you know, I'm a great person. You know, I'm an upstanding member of my society. And, well, my child needed that beating. If I didn't do that, then my child would never be who he's really supposed to be. Well, we're doing that on an individual level, and we keep it hidden behind closed doors, and nobody knows. We don't tell our friends. We don't tell our other family members. Behind closed doors, you're having these terrible things happen in families. What does the consciousness field do? It externalizes the negativity in our own lives and projects it out on a worldwide level as this hidden thing that nobody wants to talk about, just like abuse in a family. Nobody wants to talk about it. And it gets to the point that we can't avoid looking at it anymore. And that is actually a global healing process that is intended to inspire transformational change on a personal level, so that within our own lives now, we're saying, okay, enough is enough. There's all this terrible stuff going on in the world. I certainly don't need to create the same kind of energy in my own life. So we actually end up moving through healing on a personal and planetary level at the same time. And it happens to be that there's sort of a holographic effect where all of this reaches sort of a pinnacle in a date in linear time. And it does seem that 2012, if nothing else, is the turning point where we all sort of realize the way that things have been going that can't go on, and realize on a very intrinsic level that we all need to be able to get along with each other and have some acceptance and forgiveness. And so, again, I cite Obama's speech to the Muslim nations as so unprecedented compared to what Bush would have done, because it's moving towards the idea that we are all citizens of a planet. We're a human family. And if we can't sort out our own house, then why would we expect that other cultures that might be out there in the galaxy would want to visit us? If we can't even agree that one religion is equally as valid as another, or that one race is equally as valid, or one nation is equally as valid, then what happens when we find out that there's all these other human beings out there from all different planets, and they all have their own cultures? Are we going to be able to respect them? You know, we need to, first of all, be able to respect each other before these guys are going to want to show up and actually let us know that they exist and be comfortable about talking to us without the idea that we're going to start gunning them all down.
Good provoking thoughts there, David. Definitely,
well,
definitely very provoking. Well, hey, thanks for joining us today. We've got to conclude because we've gone really long here. This is fascinating stuff, and you've just got a wide body of work. We'd love to have you back on to cover some more of this.
Absolutely. Jason, it's really been a pleasure speaking with you. I'm sure that your listeners already know how to access your material. My listeners, if you guys don't already know, it's jasonhartman.com. And there's also jasonhartmanfoundation.org.
And divinecosmos.com.
We actually get like 2 different requests a day on average for radio shows. And so you were chosen among many hundreds of potential applicants to talk to me.
Good.
And we surveyed your work and we really like it, so that's why we decided to do the interview. So,
well, I appreciate it, and
yeah,
you've just got great stuff. I'd love to talk to you more about the science of peace and individual purpose and just all of this content and have you back on a future show. Will you come back soon?
I'd be happy to do another show.
Well, David Wilcox, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's been a privilege.
Music.
Afraid you could lose your home? It's a real fear for millions of Americans. But there is hope with our do-it-yourself loan modification report. Loan modifications are sponsored by the federal government and can be anything from a reduction of the principal balance to a lowering of the interest rate or an extension of the length of your mortgage. Unfortunately, negotiating a loan modification isn't easy. You'll find step-by-step expert advice in the Do-It-Yourself Loan Modification Report from jasonhartman.com.
Copyright the Hartman Media Company. For publication rights and interviews, please email media@jasonhartman.com. This show offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Opinions of guests are their own. Jason Hartman is acting as president of Platinum Properties Investor Network exclusively. Nothing contained herein should be considered personalized, personal, financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Every investor's strategy and goals are unique. You should consult with a licensed real estate broker or agent or other licensed investment, tax, and/or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed. Please call 714-820-4200 and visit www.jasonhartman.com for additional disclaimers, disclosures, and questions.